And while it's also not common and actually hasn't been backed up by scientific study, some moms maintain that certain foods they eat, especially gas-reducing foods like cabbage, broccoli, onions, cauliflower, or Brussels sprouts, unsettle their little ones' tummies. Other breastfeeding moms find that their diet is connected to colic in their babies, and that cutting out dairy products, caffeine, onions, cabbage, or beans from mom's menu minimizes baby's fussiness. A maternal diet heavy in melons, peaches, and other fruits may cause diarrhea in some sensitive breastfed babies, and red pepper can cause a rash in others. And a very few babies are actually allergic to foods in their mother's diets, with the most common offenders being cow's milk, eggs, citrus fruits, nuts, and wheat. Don't assume, though, that your baby will have a reaction to what you eat. And keep in mind that what seems like a reaction, fussiness, gassiness, is much more likely to be newborn baby business as usual. Gas happens a lot in those first few months, and so does fussiness. Sometimes what you eat can change the color of your milk and even the color of your baby's pee. And those changes can be shockers. Sip orange soda and you might find your breast milk a pink-orange hue, your baby's urine a bright pink, and yourself in a momentary panic. Pop seaweed in tablet form, kelp, or certain other supplements, and you may be seeing green breast milk. It takes between 2 and 6 hours from the time you eat a certain food until it affects the taste and aroma of your milk. So if you find your baby is gassy, spits up more, rejects the breast, or is fussy a few hours after you eat a certain food, try eliminating that food from your diet for a few days and see if your baby's symptoms or reluctance to nurse disappear. If not, add the food right back to your diet. Back on the menu. Have you been sad without your sushi? Steamed after 9 months of steamed turkey sandwiches? Are you way over those overdone burgers? Ready to kiss your queso cheese? You've missed it so much. Well, you're in luck. The food rules are far more relaxed during breastfeeding than they were when you were expecting, which means you can once again order up sushi, sashimi, crudo, ceviche, oysters on the half shell, and the rest of that raw bar you've been resisting, along with rare salmon and barely seared scallops. Just choose fish selectively since guidelines on mercury still apply. Unpasteurized soft cheese, feta, queso blanco, queso fresco, brie, camembert cheeses, blue vein cheeses, panela. Cold cuts that are actually cold. No more steamed turkey sandwiches or other heated cold-cut bologna. Cold deli meats are back on the menu, as are cold-smoked fish and meat. Pink or even red meat. Not a fan of the color gray, at least not when it comes to steak and burgers. It's your time to have it your way again, even if that's the bloody rare way, or even the steak tartare way. An occasional alcoholic drink. Cheers!
Bone up for breastfeeding. Breastfeeding can be a drain, especially when it comes to your bones. Studies show that nursing moms can lose up to 3 to 5% of their bone mass during breastfeeding, thanks to milk production, which draws the calcium a growing baby needs from mom's reserves. Sounds like a pretty good deal for baby, but a pretty bum deal for your bones. The good news is that bone lost during breastfeeding is usually recovered within 6 months post-weaning, and that you can give your bones a leg up by boosting your intake of calcium. Experts recommend that nursing moms get a minimum of 1,000 milligrams of calcium daily as part of a balanced breastfeeding diet. But since that's a minimum, it's smart to aim higher, as high as 1,500 milligrams per day, the equivalent of 5 servings of calcium foods. That's up 1 serving from your pregnancy requirement of 4. Whether your calcium comes from milk and other dairy products, fortified juices, other non-dairy sources, fortified soy milk or almond milk, tofu, almonds, green vegetables, canned salmon with the bones, and or From a supplement, you'll be giving your baby's bones the best start in life while keeping your bones healthier for the rest of your life. For better bone building, also bone up on vitamin D and magnesium. And while you're thinking about your balanced breastfeeding diet, don't forget that it should include plenty of DHA-rich foods to promote baby's brain growth. You can find this fabulous fat in walnuts, flaxseed oil, and omega-3 enriched eggs. But experts recommend that breastfeeding moms go fish too, eating a minimum of 8 ounces per week. Not a fish fan? You can also score those fats in a supplement designed for pregnancy or breastfeeding. Speaking of supplements, keep taking your prenatal vitamin or one for lactation. Counting calories? Breastfeeding burns plenty, 500 or more calories a day. Just keep in mind that you may need to increase your caloric intake as your baby grows bigger and hungrier, or decrease it if you supplement nursing with formula and or solids, or if you have considerable fat reserves you would like to burn. Can foods make milk? Every breastfeeding mom has heard about at least one food, drink, or herbal potion with the supposed power to increase milk production. They make up a rather unusual menu, from milk to beer, from blends of so-called mother's milk teas, made from herbs such as fennel, blessed thistle, fenugreek, anise, coriander, caraway, nettle, and alfalfa, to chicken broth brewed with ginger, from brewer's yeast to licorice, from garbanzo beans to potatoes, olives, carrots, and turnips. Though some breastfeeding moms, lactation consultants, and alternative practitioners report milk-boosting benefits from these home remedies, research has yet to back up the claims. Most experts continue to maintain that the effects of such milk makers are largely psychological. If a mother believes that what she eats or drinks will make milk, she'll be relaxed. If she's relaxed, she'll have a good letdown. If her letdown reflex is good, she'll interpret it to mean she has more milk and that the potion worked its magic. In most cases, the remedies cause no harm. And in the case of such nutritionally charged foods as carrots and other root vegetables, they can do any newly delivered body a lot of good. But the bottom breastfeeding line is, the best way to increase your milk supply is to breastfeed more often.
What you drink. How much more do you have to drink to make sure your baby gets enough to drink? For the average breastfeeding mom, staying hydrated requires about 128 ounces of fluid per day. Break that down to glasses of water, 16, and that sounds like a lot. But this number includes all sources of fluids, not only the water and other liquids down by the glass, but the high water content foods eaten. Fruit, salads, veggies. Fluid needs also vary a lot from mom to mom, depending on her activity level, her lifestyle, where she lives, her BMI, and more. And it can change from day to day. How can you tell if your fluid intake measures up? As a general rule, waiting until you're thirsty to drink means you've waited too long. So make a habit of drinking up before thirst kicks in. Another good way to make sure you're keeping your fluids flowing. Drink when baby drinks. A glass for every feed, especially at first when you're feeding so often, will go a long way towards your quota. Fill in gaps by drinking water between feeds and eating lots of high-end fluid foods. Keep in mind that your milk supply won't tell you if your fluid intake is low. It'll decrease only if you're seriously dehydrated. Yet another example of how a mom's body puts her baby's needs first. But your urine will. It'll become darker and scanter when you're not drinking enough. Getting enough fluids, whether you're breastfeeding or not, is particularly important when you're recovering from your baby's birth. You lose a lot of fluids very quickly during childbirth. Not drinking enough can also set you up for a variety of health issues you definitely don't want to be dealing with as a new mom, including urinary tract infections, UTIs, and constipation. And being even mildly dehydrated can also increase fatigue. What medication you take? Most medications, both over-the-counter and prescription, don't affect the quantity of milk a breastfeeding mom makes or the well-being of her baby. While it's true that what goes into your body usually does make its way into your milk supply, the amount that ultimately ends up in your baby's meals is generally a tiny fraction of what ends up in you. Most drugs in typical doses appear to have no effect on a nursing baby at all. Others a mild, temporary effect, and a very few can be significantly harmful. But since not enough is known about the long-term effects of medications on breastfeeding babies, it's best to play it safe when you're considering taking over-the-counter or prescription drugs while you're breastfeeding. How can you tell whether the medication you're about to pop is safe for your breastfeeding baby? Just about all over-the-counter and prescription medications and supplements carry a warning on the label, package, or both to consult a doctor before using them if you're breastfeeding. But many of them are actually considered safe to take occasionally as needed, and others are believed to be safe to take as prescribed. To sort out drug safety during lactation, your best source of information will be your baby's pediatrician or your prenatal practitioner, who can give you the short list of common medications that are breastfeeding compatible and that you can take as needed without getting clearance each time, as well as advise you on whether medications or supplements you've been prescribed or take regularly, say for a chronic condition, may need to be adjusted until you wean your little one. You can also check out toxnet.nlm.nih.gov. Click on LactMed, motherrisk.org, click on breastfeeding and drugs, or mothertobaby.org. Do be sure that any doctor, dentist, or other healthcare provider who prescribes a medication for you knows that you're breastfeeding. The most recent research indicates that most medications, including acetaminophen, ibuprofen, most sedatives, antihistamines, decongestants, some antibiotics, antihypertensives, antithyroid drugs, and some antidepressants can be used safely during breastfeeding. But again, check with a pediatrician for the most up-to-date info. Some medications, however, including anti-cancer drugs, lithium, and ergot, drugs used to treat migraines, are clearly harmful, and the research jury is still out on others, making them suspect. In some cases, a less safe medication can safely be discontinued while a mom is breastfeeding, and in others, it's possible to find a safer substitute. When medication that isn't compatible with breastfeeding is needed short-term, nursing can be stopped temporarily with breast pumped and milk tossed, aka pump and dump. Or dosing can be timed for just after nursing or before baby's longest sleep period. As always, take medicines, including herbals and supplements, only with your practitioner's approval. What you should avoid. Ready to pop a cork, add an extra shot to your latte, or order your burger rare after 9 months of a job and meat well done? Go ahead. You earned it. Just remember that while breastfeeding moms definitely have more wiggle room when it comes to diet and lifestyle, there are still some substances that are smart to avoid or cut back on while you're nursing your little one. Fortunately, many are the same ones you probably already weaned yourself off of in preparation for or during pregnancy, so you're not likely to have new habits to kick or curtail. Nicotine. Many of the toxic substances in tobacco enter the bloodstream and eventually your milk. Heavy smoking, more than a pack a day, decreases milk production and can cause vomiting, diarrhea, rapid heart rate, and restlessness in babies. Though the long-term effects of nicotine on your baby aren't known for sure, it's safe to speculate that they aren't positive. It's also known that secondhand smoke from parental smoking, even if you're not breastfeeding, can cause a variety of health problems in offspring, including colic, respiratory infections, and an increase in the risk of SIDS. Ask your doctor about nicotine replacement therapy, nicotine patches or gum, for instance. If you have trouble quitting, you'll get a lower dose of nicotine. If you can't manage to stop smoking, your baby is still better off being breastfed than being formula fed. However, do try cutting back on the number of cigarettes you smoke each day, and don't smoke just before breastfeeding. Weed. Any marijuana you smoke or ingest will find its way into your breast milk. It stays there for 6 days and into your baby, and there could be long-term negative effects on your baby. So far, research has shown that weed can lead to slow weight gain and slower development in the baby. It also increases the risk of SIDS and leads to decreased milk supply. And since marijuana can stay in your system for so long, pumping and dumping won't help keep weed away from your baby. Your best bet, steer clear of weed when you're breastfeeding. Alcohol. Alcohol finds its way into breast milk, though the amount your baby gets is considerably less than the amount you drink. While it's probably fine to have a few drinks a week, though no more than one in a single day, it's smart to limit your consumption of alcoholic drinks in general while nursing. Heavy drinking comes with some serious risks when you're breastfeeding. In large doses, alcohol can make babies sleepy, sluggish, unresponsive, and unable to suck well. In very large doses, it can interfere with breathing. Too many drinks can also impair your own functioning, whether you're nursing or not, making you less able to care for, protect, and nourish your baby, and can make you more susceptible to depression, fatigue, and lapses in judgment. Also, excesses in alcohol can weaken your letdown reflex. If you do choose to have an occasional drink, sip it right after you nurse, rather than before, to allow a couple of hours for the alcohol to metabolize. If you're not sure if your body has metabolized the alcohol by the time you're ready for a next feeding, you can test your breast milk using Milk Screen. Just dip the plastic strip that comes with the kit into Express Milk, wait 2 minutes, and check to see if the test pad on the end of the strip turns colors. If it has, it means there's still alcohol present, and that means you should pump and dump for this feeding and reach into the freezer for some stored breast milk. Caffeine. 1 or 2 cups of caffeinated coffee, tea, or cola a day won't affect your baby or you. And during those early sleep-deprived postpartum weeks, a little jolt from your local coffee bar may be just what you need to keep going. More caffeine probably isn't a good idea, because too many cups could make one or both of you jittery, irritable, and sleepless. Enough said. Caffeine has also been linked to reflux and colic in some babies. Keep in mind that since babies can't get rid of caffeine as efficiently as adults, it can build up in their systems. So limit your caffeine while you're breastfeeding, or switch to or supplement with caffeine-free drinks. Herbal medications. Although herbs are natural, they aren't always safe. They can be just as powerful, and in some cases, just as toxic as some drugs. And as with drugs, chemical ingredients from herbs do get into breast milk. The problem is, few studies have been done looking at the safety of herbs, so little is known about how they affect a nursing baby. To add to the confusion, there are no rules for the distribution of herbs, and the FDA doesn't regulate them. Even herbs like fenugreek, which has been used for centuries to increase a nursing mother's milk supply and is sometimes recommended in small amounts by lactation consultants, can have side effects. So to play it safe, always a good policy when nursing your little one, ask your doctor before taking any herbal remedy. Think twice before drinking herbal tea or breastfeeding brews too, which the FDA has urged caution on until more is known. For now, stick to reliable brands of herbal teas that are thought to be safe during lactation. These include chamomile, orange spice, peppermint, raspberry, redbush, and rosehip, among others. Read labels carefully to make sure other herbs haven't been added to the brew, and drink them only in moderation. Chemicals in your diet. Nobody goes out of their way to add more chemicals to their diet, and really, you don't have to go too far to find them. Additives, preservatives, artificial colors and flavors, pesticides and other residues on produce, hormones in poultry, meat, and dairy. It's a chemical jungle out there. Happily, it's easier than ever to stay away from chemical additives and chemical residues because manufacturers are offering more and more products that are mostly or completely free of them. Since chemicals added to your diet are added to your breastfed baby's diet, it makes sense to steer clear from as many as possible, something you can do by practicing a little prudence and a lot of label reading. As a general rule, try to avoid processed foods that contain long lists of additives and try the following tips for safer eating. Sweeten safely. If you're looking to save calories without sparing sweetness, you have more options than ever. Stevia, Sonnet, Splenda, and Equal NutraSweet are all considered safe during lactation, though it's best to use Equal in moderation and avoid it entirely if you have PKU or your baby does. Agave can be used during lactation, but in small amounts. Whey Low, a refined sugar substitute, is a blend of sucrose, fructose, and lactose, but with many fewer calories than regular sugar, is safe during lactation, and it's not thought to be a problem for the lactose intolerant either. The one sweetener that's not so sweet when you're breastfeeding, Sweeten Low, aka saccharin. Go organic. Certified organic fruits and vegetables are widely available, as are organic dairy products and organic poultry, meat, and eggs, and products made with organic grains, like cereal and bread. Choose them whenever you have the choice and when you can afford the usually steeper price, and you'll be minimizing the number of chemicals your baby is exposed to through your breast milk. But also, realize that a certain amount of pesticides and other questionable chemicals will most likely end up in your diet, and thus your baby's, despite best efforts, and that small amounts are nothing to stress about. In other words, it isn't necessary to drive yourself crazy, or drive yourself all over town, or drive your marketing budget into uncomfortable territory in order to fill your grocery cart with organic-only products. When organic isn't available or you just can't afford the extra cost, peel or scrub fruit and vegetable skins well. Use produce wash for extra protection. Keep in mind that local produce usually contains lower levels of pesticides and preservatives than produce that must travel long distances. A good reason to visit a farmer's market or even to grow your own. Stay low fat. As it was during pregnancy, it's smart to choose low-fat dairy products, as well as lean meats and poultry without the skin, for two reasons. First, a low-fat diet will make it easier to shed your pregnancy weight gain, something you're likely eager to do. Second, the pesticides and other chemicals ingested by animals are stored in their fat and in their organs, such as liver, kidneys, and brain, which is why you should eat these meats only rarely while you're breastfeeding. Going lean means you'll be avoiding more of those chemicals. Since organic dairy, poultry, and meat products don't pose the same potential risk, select them when you can, especially when you're reaching for a higher fat variety. Fish selectively. The same EPA guidelines on fish safety that apply to pregnant women apply to breastfeeding ones. So to minimize your and your baby's exposure to mercury, avoid eating shark, swordfish, king mackerel, and tilefish, and limit your consumption to 6 ounces per week of tuna. Chunk light tuna contains less mercury than tuna steaks and canned albacore, and 12 ounces total per week of salmon, wild is best, sea bass, flounder, sole, haddock, halibut, ocean perch, whitefish, pollock, cod, tuna, canned is safer than fresh, butterfish, catfish, crab, mussels, scallops, calamari, and farm-raised trout. Anchovies, clams, tilapia, sardines, and shrimp are low in mercury and can be eaten while breastfeeding as well. Wondering whether going fish-free might be a healthier option for you and your baby? Actually, guidelines recommend that breastfeeding moms eat a minimum of 8 ounces per week of low-mercury fish, since the nutrients found in seafood, especially fatty fish like salmon and sardines, have been shown to boost a baby's brain power. Want some really good fish news? Sashimi, raw oysters, and rare salmon can be ordered up again.
Chapter 4. A First Year Timeline. The First Year at a Glance.
Prenatal development, from microscopic egg to cuddly newborn, may be a tough act to follow. But the first 12 months of your baby's developmental life, taking your little one from tiny blob to buzzing, busy toddler, will be pretty impressive, too. Make that mind-blowing, hard to believe, and amazing to watch. Your little one's large motor skills will progress at an astonishing pace. First head control, and then progressive body control. Rolling over, sitting, cruising. Sensory and thinking skills, baby brain power, will soar. At first, your newborn will turn toward a sound or to watch someone's face. But by year's end, baby will be copying sounds and actions. Coos will evolve to babble and then to real words. Small motor skills will be finessed. Holding a rattle at first with a full fist, then neatly snatching up a small piece of food with chubby thumb and tiny index finger. These developmental milestones follow roughly the same timeline for most babies in the first year, but the pace and pattern of development is far from uniform. Some 5-month-old babies may be sitting pretty and unsupported, while others haven't even rolled over yet. Some 10-month-olds may be walking up a storm, others talking up a storm, and some are taking their sweet time with both. Some babies may speed ahead early in most departments, while others get a later start, eventually catching up or even zipping past. Some babies are relatively consistent in their pace of development, while others develop in fits and starts. Illness or major change in baby's life can temporarily throw development off pace altogether. But most of the time, what's normal developmentally is what's normal for your one-of-a-kind baby. If babies are all over the map developmentally, why bother mapping development at all? Developmental norms are useful for comparing your baby to a broad range of normal infants, in order to assess his or her progress and to make sure your baby's development is on target. Or for comparing your baby's rate of development 1 month to the next, to see if he or she is holding steady, lagging a little, or racing ahead. Your doctor will also look for certain milestones at each well baby visit, to be sure your baby's development fits within the very wide range of normal for his or her age. Your baby, like every baby, is one of a kind. Incomparable, really. Which is why comparing your baby with a baby down the block or an older sibling can be misleading and sometimes unnecessarily stressful. So can obsessing over developmental timelines, As long as your baby is reaching the majority of milestones on time, his or her development is on target, which means you can sit back and marvel at those amazing achievements instead of analyzing them. If, on the other hand, you notice that your baby is consistently missing milestones or seems to be suddenly slipping significantly in development, or if you have that gut feeling that something isn't right, check in with the doctor. Most likely, there's no problem at all. Some babies just move forward on a slower-than-average pace, and you'll get the reassurance you're looking for. If a lag is identified, the right intervention will help your little one maximize his or her developmental potential. Not interested in seeing where your baby falls out on the developmental timeline? That's perfectly fine. Timelines aren't a must-do, especially if your little one is regularly being assessed at well baby visits. Let your baby do the developing and leave the screening to the doctor. For more on developmental milestones, go to whattoexpect.com.
You know your baby best. Maybe you don't have a degree in child development, but when it comes to your child's development, even the experts agree that you're something of an expert. Unlike a pediatrician who usually sees your baby only once a month or less, and who sees hundreds of other babies in between, you see your baby every single day. You spend more time interacting with your baby than anyone else. You probably notice nuances in your baby's development that others might miss. Whenever you have a concern about your child's development, whether it's because some areas are lagging, or because a skill that was mastered seems to have been forgotten, or just because you've got a nagging feeling that something's not quite right, don't keep it to yourself. Child development experts believe that parents not only are their children's best advocates, but can also be key in the early diagnosis of developmental disorders, such as autism. Early diagnosis can lead to the kind of early intervention that can make an enormous difference in the long-term development future of a child with autism or another developmental disorder. To help parents better help their children, doctors have pinpointed a number of developmental red flags to look out for as early as 9 months. Your baby's pediatrician will screen for these red flags as well during well baby checkups. But if you notice your almost one-year-old doesn't exchange back and forth sounds with you, doesn't smile or gesture with you, fails to establish and maintain eye contact with you, doesn't point or use other gestures to get needs met, doesn't enjoy playing social games such as peekaboo or patty cake, fails to respond when you call his or her name, or doesn't look when you point at something, let the doctor know. It could be that nothing at all is wrong, but further assessment and perhaps referral to a specialist can help determine whether there is reason for concern. Developmental milestones in the first year.
Newborn. Most newborns will probably be able to lift head briefly when on the tummy, move arms and legs on both sides of the body equally well, focus on objects within 8 to 15 inches, especially your face. Newborn to 1 month. Most babies will probably be able to lift head briefly when on the tummy. Tummy time should be supervised. Focus on a face. Bring hands to face. Suck well. Half of all babies will be able to respond to a loud noise in some way, such as startling, crying, quieting. Some babies will be able to lift head 45 degrees when on tummy. Vocalize in ways other than crying, such as that adorable cooing. Smile in response to a smile, a social smile. A few babies will be able to lift head 90 degrees when on tummy. Hold head steady when upright. Bring both hands together. Smile spontaneously. 1 to 2 months. Most babies will probably be able to smile in response to a smile. Notice own hands. respond to a loud sound in some way, such as startling, crying, quieting. Grasp and shake hand toys. Half of all babies will be able to vocalize in ways other than crying, cooing, for instance. Lift head 45 degrees when on tummy. Some babies will be able to hold head steady when upright, while on the tummy, raise chest supported by arms. Roll over. Tummy to back is usually first. Pay attention to an object as small as a raisin, but make sure such objects are kept out of baby's reach. Reach for a dangling object. A few babies will be able to lift head 90 degrees while on tummy. Bring both hands together. Smile spontaneously. Laugh out loud. Squeal in delight. Follow an object held about 6 inches above baby's face and moved 180 degrees from one side to the other with baby watching all the way. 2 to 3 months. Most babies will probably be able to lift head 45 degrees when on tummy, assuming baby has been given enough tummy time to practice. Kick energetically and straighten legs when on back. Bring hands to mouth. Half of all babies will be able to lift head 90 degrees when on tummy. Smile spontaneously. Laugh out loud. Follow an object held about 6 inches above baby's face and moved 180 degrees from one side to the other with baby watching all the way. Hold head steady when upright. While on tummy, raise chest supported by arms. Reach for a dangled object. Pay attention to an object as small as a raisin, but make sure such objects are kept out of baby's reach. Some babies will be able to roll over. Tummy to back is usually first. Squeal in delight. Bring both hands together. Reach for an object. Turn in the direction of a voice, particularly mommy's or daddy's. A few babies will be able to bear some weight on legs when held in a standing position. Keep head level with body when pulled to sitting. Razz, make a wet razzing sound. Say agu or similar vowel consonant combination.
It's cumulative. Babies gather lots of new skills every month, but typically hold on to last month's achievements, and the month before last, and so on. So assume that your baby's skill set will incorporate those will probably be able to items from previous months in addition to brand new ones acquired this month. Preemie timing. Premature infants generally reach milestones later than other babies of the same age, often achieving them closer to their adjusted age, the age they would be if they had been born at term, and sometimes later.
3 to 4 months. Most babies will probably be able to lift head 90 degrees when on tummy and turn head from side to side, assuming baby has been given enough tummy time to practice. Lift head when held in your arms at your shoulder. Anticipate being lifted. Laugh out loud. Follow an object in an arc about 6 inches above the face for 180 degrees from one side to the other with baby watching all the way. Half of all babies will be able to quiet down at the sound of a soothing voice or when held. While on the tummy, raise chest supported by arms. Keep head level with body when pulled to sitting. Roll over. Tummy to back is usually first. Pay attention to an object as small as a raisin, but make sure such objects are kept out of baby's reach. Reach for an object. Squeal in delight. Turn in the direction of a voice, particularly mommy's or daddy's. Some babies will be able to say agu or similar vowel consonant combinations. Razz, make a wet razzing sound. a few babies will be able to bear some weight on legs when held in a standing position, sit without support, object if you try to take a toy away. 4 to 5 months, most babies will probably be able to hold head steady when upright, while on tummy, raise chest, supported by arms. Keep head level with body when pulled to sitting. Roll over. Tummy to back is usually first. Babies who spend little time on their tummies during playtime may reach this milestone later, and that's not cause for concern. Pay attention to an object as small as a raisin, but make sure such objects are kept out of baby's reach. Squeal in delight. Smile spontaneously. Reach for an object. See across the room. Half of all babies will be able to bear some weight on legs when held upright. Say agu or similar vowel consonant combinations. Raz, make a wet razzing sound. Play with toes when on back. Some babies will be able to pass a cube or other object from one hand to the other. A few babies will be able to sit without support, pull up to a standing position from sitting, stand holding on to someone, object if you try to take a toy away, work to get a toy out of reach, look for a dropped object, rake with fingers a tiny object and pick it up in fist, but keep all dangerous objects out of baby's reach. Babble, combining vowels and consonants, such as ga-ga-ga, ba-ba-ba, ma-ma-ma, and da-da-da. 5 to 6 months, most babies will probably be able to play with toes, roll over, help hold bottle during feedings, say agu or similar vowel consonant combinations. Half of all babies will be able to bear some weight on legs when held in a standing position. Sit without support. Coo or babble when happy. Raz, make a wet razzing noise. Some babies will be able to stand holding on to someone or something. Object if you try to take a toy away. Work to get a toy that's out of reach. Pass a toy or another object from one hand to the other. Look for a dropped object. Rake with fingers a tiny object and pick it up in fist. Keep all dangerous objects out of baby's reach. Babble, combining vowels and consonants such as ga-ga-ga, ba-ba-ba, ma-ma-ma, and da-da-da. Recognize books and the rhymes in those books. A few babies will be able to creep or crawl. More likely if baby has had plenty of tummy time, but crawling is not a must-do milestone. Pull up to standing position from sitting. Get into a sitting position from tummy. Pick up a tiny object with thumb and finger. Keep all dangerous objects out of baby's reach. Say mama or dada, but without meaning. 6 to 7 months. Most babies will probably be able to sit in a high chair. Open mouth for a spoon. Raz, make a wet razzing sound. Coo or babble when happy. Smile often when interacting with you. Explore by mouthing objects. Turn in the direction of a voice. Bear weight on legs and possibly even bounce when held in standing position. Half of all babies will be able to sit without support. Object if you try to take a toy away. Work to get a toy that's out of reach. Look for a dropped object. Rake with fingers an object and pick it up in fist. Keep all dangerous objects out of baby's reach. Pass a toy or other object from one hand to the other. Babble, combining vowels and consonants such as ga-ga-ga, ba-ba-ba, ma-ma-ma, and da-da-da. Play along in the game of peekaboo. Recognize books and the rhymes in those books. Some babies will be able to creep or crawl. though babies who spend little time on their tummies during playtime may reach this milestone later, or skip straight to cruising, and that's not cause for concern. Pull up to standing position from sitting. Get into a sitting position from tummy. Stand holding on to someone or something. A few babies will be able to clap hands or wave bye-bye. Pick up a tiny object with thumb and finger. Keep all dangerous objects out of baby's reach. Feed self a cracker or other finger food. Walk holding on to furniture. Cruise. Say mama or dada without meaning. 7 to 8 months. Most babies will probably be able to bear weight on legs and even bounce when held in standing position. Roll from tummy to back and back to tummy. Reach for utensil when being fed. Feed self a cracker or other finger food. Find a partially hidden object. Rake with fingers an object and pick it up in fist. Keep all dangerous objects out of baby's reach. Look for a dropped object. Half of all babies will be able to stand holding on to someone or something. Get into a sitting position from tummy. Pass a cube or other object from one hand to the other. Object if you try to take a toy away. Work to get a toy that's out of reach. Play along in a game of peekaboo. Some babies will be able to creep or crawl, though babies who spend little time on their tummies during playtime may reach this milestone later or skip straight to cruising, and that's not cause for concern. Pull up to standing position from sitting. Pick up a tiny object with thumb and finger. Keep all dangerous objects out of baby's reach. Say mama or dada without meaning. A few babies will be able to clap hands or wave bye-bye. Walk holding on to furniture. Cruise. Stand alone momentarily. Understand, no, but not always obey it. 8 to 9 months. Most babies will probably be able to get into a sitting position from tummy. Work to get a toy that's out of reach. Respond to own name. Smile at self in mirror, though not knowing that image is their own. Follow your gaze when you look away. Half of all babies will be able to pull up to standing position from sitting. Creep or crawl, though babies who spend little time on their tummies during playtime may reach this milestone later, or skip straight to cruising, and that's not cause for concern. Stand holding on to someone or something. Object if you try to take a toy away. Pick up a tiny object with thumb and finger. Keep all dangerous objects out of baby's reach. Say mama or dada without meaning. Play peekaboo. Some babies will be able to walk holding on to furniture. Cruise. Stand alone momentarily. Clap hands or wave bye-bye. Understand, no, but not always obey it. A few babies will be able to stand alone well. Play ball, roll ball back to you. Drink from a cup independently. Say dada or mama with meaning. Say one word other than mama or dada. Respond to a one-step command with gestures. Please give me the ball, said with hand out. 9 to 10 months. Most babies will probably be able to stand holding on to someone or something. Pull up to standing position from sitting. Object if you try to take a toy away. Say mama or dada without meaning. Play along in a game of peekaboo or other anticipation games. Exchange back and forth gestures and sounds with you. Half of all babies will be able to walk holding on to furniture, clap hands or wave bye-bye, pick up a tiny object with thumb and finger. Keep all dangerous objects out of baby's reach. Understand, no, but not always obey it. Some babies will be able to stand alone momentarily. Stand alone well. Say dada or mama with meaning. say one word other than mama or dada. Point to something to get needs met. A few babies will be able to indicate wants in ways other than crying. Drink from a cup independently. Play ball, roll ball back to you. Pick up a tiny object neatly with tips of thumb and forefinger. Keep all dangerous objects out of baby's reach. Use immature jargoning, gibberish that sounds as if baby is talking in a made-up foreign language. Respond to a one-step command with gestures. Please give me the doll, said with hand out. Walk well. 10 to 11 months. Most babies will probably be able to pick up a tiny object with thumb and finger. As always, make sure dangerous objects stay out of baby's reach. Understand no, but not always obey it. Look at what you're pointing at and then look back at you with a reaction. Half of all babies will be able to walk holding onto furniture, cruise, point or gesture to something to get needs met, clap hands or wave bye-bye, drink from a cup independently. Some babies will be able to stand alone momentarily, say dada or mama with meaning. Say one word other than mama or dada. Respond to a one-step command without gestures. Please give the cup to me, said without your hand out. A few babies will be able to stand alone well, walk well, play ball, roll ball back to you. Use immature jargoning, gibberish that sounds as if baby is talking in a made-up foreign language. Say three or more words other than mama or dada. 11 to 12 months. Most babies will probably be able to walk holding onto furniture, cruise. Use a few gestures to get needs met. Pointing, showing, reaching, waving. Respond to name when called. Drink from cup with help. Bang two blocks or other toys together. Cooperate with dressing by offering a foot or arm. Raise arms to be picked up. Half of all babies will be able to clap hands or wave bye-bye. Most children accomplish these feats by 13 months. Drink from a cup independently. Assuming baby has been given practice. Pick up a tiny object neatly with tips of thumb and forefinger. Many babies do not accomplish this until nearly 15 months. Continue to keep all dangerous objects out of baby's reach. Stand alone momentarily. Many don't accomplish this until 13 months. Say dada or mama with meaning. Most will say at least one of these by 14 months. Say one word other than mama or dada. Many won't say their first word until 14 months or later. Copy sounds and gestures you make. Some babies will be able to play ball, roll a ball back to you, though many don't accomplish this feat until 16 months. Stand alone well. Many don't reach this point until 14 months. Use immature jargoning, gibberish that sounds like a foreign language. Half of all babies don't start jargoning until after their first birthday, and many not until they are 15 months old. Walk well. 3 out of 4 babies don't walk well until 13 and a half months, and many not until considerably later. Good crawlers may be slower to walk, and when other development is normal, late walking is rarely a cause for concern. Respond to music with body motion. A few babies will be able to say 3 words or more, other than mama or dada. A good half of all babies won't reach this stage until 13 months, and many not until 16 months. Respond to a one-step command without gestures. Please give the book to me, said without your hand out. Most children won't reach this stage until after their first birthday, many not until after 16 months. Respond to another person's upset by becoming upset. The beginnings of empathy. Show affection, particularly to mommy and daddy. Show stranger and/or separation anxiety. Some children never will.
growth charts.
How does your baby's growth measure up? By plotting measurements of length, weight, and head circumference at each well baby visit, the doctor can see how your baby stacks up percentage-wise against other babies of the same age and gender. More important, tracking growth allows the doctor to compare your baby against him or herself and follow your baby's growth trends over time, a more important measure than which particular percentile he or she falls into at a given time. For instance, if your little one has been consistently hovering around the 15th percentile month after month, he or she may be destined to be on the small side, or may be destined to have a dramatic growth spurt later on in childhood. On the other hand, if your baby has been in the 60th percentile for months and then abruptly dips to the 15th percentile, that sudden deviation from the usual growth pattern might raise questions. Is baby sick? Getting enough to eat? Is there some underlying medical reason for the sudden growth slowdown? Assessing how your baby grows isn't just a simple numbers game. To get a really clear picture of growth, the doctor will also consider the relationship between weight and length. While the percentiles for length and weight don't have to match up precisely, they should be within a 10 to 20% range of each other. If length is 85th percentile, but weight is 15th percentile, your baby may be underweight. The other way around, your baby may be overfed. Figuring out whether your little one is overweight, underweight, or more likely just right becomes easier when you plot your infant's progress on the length-weight charts used by most pediatricians. The charts that follow, which come from the World Health Organization, WHO, are based on the growth of almost 19,000 breastfed babies in 5 cities in 5 different countries who grew up in optimal living conditions. Both the CDC and the AAP recommend that doctors use the WHO charts for babies under age 2. These days, more and more babies are measuring either above or below standard length and weight ranges. In other words, they're off the charts or hovering very closely to its edges. Experts say the number of extra large babies is due to rising obesity rates. Obese or overweight expectant moms are more likely to have babies who are considered overweight, while the number of undersized babies is a result of the increasing number of premature infants who are born tiny and survive. Formula-fed infants are also more likely to be overweight. You can plot your baby's progress on these charts. Notice that one set of charts calculates the relationship between weight and length, plus records head circumference, and the other keeps track of weight and length separately. There are also separate charts for boys and girls. That's because even at this age, boys tend to be taller, heavier, and grow faster than girls do.
Chapter 5. Your Newborn.
The long wait is over. Your baby, the little person you've been eagerly expecting for 9 months, is finally here. As you hold this tiny, warm, sweet-smelling bundle in your arms for the first time, you're bound to be flooded by 1,001 emotions, ranging from over-the-moon thrilled to over-the-top nervous. And especially if you're a first-time parent, by at least 1,001 questions, ranging from, well, you name it. Why is her head such a funny shape? Why does he have acne already? Why can't I get her to stay awake long enough to breastfeed? Why won't he stop crying? As you search around for the operating instructions, don't babies come with them? Here's something you need to know. Yes, you've got a lot to learn. After all, nobody's born knowing how to bathe a slippery baby or massage a clogged tear duct. But give yourself half a chance and you'll be surprised to find how much of this parenting thing actually comes naturally, including the most important operating instruction of all. Love your baby. So find the answers to your questions in the chapters that follow. But as you do, don't forget to tap into your most valuable resource, your own instincts.
Your baby's first moments.
You've labored and pushed, and you're finally meeting your new bundle of joy face to face. Once the initial meet and greet is over, baby will need to be checked over. You can expect that a doctor, midwife, or nurse will do some or all of the following. Clear baby's airways by suctioning his or her nose, which may be done as soon as the head appears or after the rest of baby is delivered. Clamp the umbilical cord in two places and cut between the two clamps, although dad may do the cutting honors. Antibiotic ointment or an antiseptic may be applied to the cord stump, and the clamp is usually left on for at least 24 hours. Assign baby an Apgar score, rating of baby's condition at 1 and 5 minutes after birth. Administer antibiotic ointment to baby's eyes to prevent infection. Weigh baby. Average weight is 7.5 pounds. 95% of full-term babies weigh between 5.5 and 9.5 pounds. Measure baby's length. Average length is 20 inches. 95% of newborns are between 18 and 22 inches. Measure head circumference. Average is 13.8 inches. Normal range is from 12.9 to 14.7 inches. Count fingers and toes and note if baby's body parts and features appear normal. Put baby on your tummy skin to skin, aka kangaroo care, for some getting to know your baby time. Before baby leaves the delivery or birthing room, place ID bands on baby, mom, and dad. Baby's footprints and mom's fingerprint may also be obtained for future identification purposes. The ink is washed off your baby's feet, and any residual smudges you may note are only temporary. The baby's doctor or a staff pediatrician, if your chosen doctor doesn't have privileges at the hospital where you delivered, will perform a more complete examination of the new arrival sometime during the next 24 hours. Try to be on hand for this exam. It's a good time to start asking the many questions you're sure to be collecting. The doctor will check the following. Weight. It will probably have dropped since birth and will drop a little more in the next couple of days. Head circumference. Maybe larger than it was at first as any molding of the head begins to round out. And length, which won't actually have changed, but might seem to have because measuring a squirmy baby isn't exactly an exact procedure. Heart sounds and respiration. Internal organs such as kidneys, liver, and spleen examined externally by touch. Newborn reflexes. Hip rotation. Hands, feet, arms, legs, genitals. The umbilical stump. During your baby's hospital stay, the nurses and or doctors will record your newborn's first pees and poops to rule out any problems in the elimination department. Administer a vitamin K shot to enhance baby's blood clotting ability. Take blood from your infant's heel with a quick stick to be screened for phenylketonuria or PKU and other metabolic disorders. Some states mandate tests for only 21 disorders, but you can arrange for a private lab to screen for 30 to 40 metabolic disorders. Possibly, depending on the state and hospital you deliver in, screen for congenital heart disease using pulse oximetry. Administer the first dose of the hepatitis B vaccine within 24 hours of birth. Give your baby a bath at least 8 to 24 hours or more after birth. Conduct a hearing screening.
Delayed cord clamping. Cutting the cord is a momentous moment for new parents, but one you're probably best off waiting on, at least for a few more moments. Studies show that the optimal time to clamp and then cut the cord is when it stops pulsating, around 1 to 3 minutes after birth. instead of the immediate clamping and cutting that was once done routinely and still is sometimes done. There seem to be no drawbacks and many potential benefits to delaying cord clamping, a good reason to consider adding this protocol to your birth plan. Planning to bank baby's cord blood? Cord blood collection can be done after the cord stops pulsating, which means that it doesn't necessarily interfere with delayed clamping. But just to be sure your practitioner's on the same page about this, talk over the plan well before your baby's arrival. Testing your baby. A few drops of blood can go a long way. Those drops, taken routinely from baby's heels before hospital discharge, are used to test for 21 or more serious genetic, metabolic, hormonal, and functional disorders, including PKU, hypothyroidism, congenital adrenal hyperplasia, biotinidase deficiency, maple syrup urine disease, galactosemia, homocystinuria, medium chain acyl-CoA dehydrogenase deficiency, and sickle cell anemia. Though most of these conditions are very rare, they can be life-threatening if they go undetected and untreated. Testing for these and other metabolic disorders is inexpensive, and in a very unlikely event that your baby tests positive for any of them, your baby's pediatrician can verify the results and begin treatment immediately, which can make a tremendous difference in the prognosis. Since 2009, all 50 states and the District of Columbia require newborn screening for at least 21 disorders, and most states test newborns for all 29 disorders for which the American College of Medical Genetics, ACMG, recommends testing. Check with your doctor or state health department to find out what tests are done in your state. You can also look up your state's requirements at the National Newborn Screening and Genetics Resource Center, NNSGRC, website, genes-r-us.uthscsa.edu. If your hospital doesn't automatically provide all 29 tests, you can arrange with your doctor to have them done. For more information about newborn screening, contact the March of Dimes at marchofdimes.com. The CDC also recommends, and most states require, screening tests soon after birth for congenital heart disease, CHD. This condition, which affects 1 in 100 babies, can lead to disability or death if not caught and treated early. Happily, early treatment can reduce those risks significantly, and in most cases, completely. Screening for CHD is simple and painless. A sensor is placed on your baby's skin to measure your little one's pulse and the amount of oxygen in his or her blood. If the results of the screening test seem questionable, the doctors will be able to do further testing. Echocardiogram, the ultrasound of the heart, for instance, to determine if anything is wrong. If your hospital doesn't routinely perform the test, ask the doctor if it could be given to your baby anyway.
Apgar test. The first test most babies are given, and which most pass with good scores, is the Apgar test. The scores, recorded at 1 minute and again at 5 minutes after birth, reflect the newborn's general condition and are based on observations made in 5 assessment categories. Babies who score between 7 and 10 are in good to excellent condition and usually require only routine post-delivery care. Those scoring between 4 and 6 are in fair condition and may require some resuscitative measures. And those who score under 4 are in poor condition and require immediate attention. While this test can tell you a lot about your baby's condition in the few minutes after birth, it doesn't tell you much about anything long-term. In fact, even babies whose scores remain low at 5 minutes usually turn out to be completely healthy. For babies born at home, you'll have more control over the birth, comfortable surroundings, way better food, no limits on the number of friends and family who welcome your little bundle with you, and no bags to pack. But having your baby at home also means you'll have more homework to do later. Some procedures that are routine in hospitals and birthing centers may just be bureaucratic red tape that you and your baby can easily skip. Others, however, are necessary for your baby's health and future well-being, and still others are required by law. Give birth in a hospital and the following are automatically taken care of. But give birth at home and you'll need to give some thought to eye ointment. Some midwives allow the parents of a newborn to give informed consent not to administer antibiotic eye ointment, which protects babies from infection after birth. Though the ointment used is not irritating to babies' eyes, it can blur vision, making that first eye-to-eye contact in mommy's or daddy's arms less clear. That said, avoiding the ointment can lead to blindness in a baby if infection is missed, so discuss this with your practitioner before delivery. Plan for routine shots and tests. All babies born in a hospital receive their first dose of hepatitis B vaccine and all receive a shot of vitamin K to prevent serious bleeding shortly after delivery. They're also given a heel stick to screen for PKU, hypothyroidism, and a variety of other conditions. Speak to your baby's doctor about when these procedures can be performed on your newborn. Also ask the pediatrician about arranging a hearing test and congenital heart disease, CHD screening test, typically administered to newborns before they leave the hospital. The test for CHD